And it's really seemed to have struck a chord across the nation and brought out the goodness in people. How do you see that? What do you think happened on a personal level there?
Well, I believe that people really have a good heart, and once that they find a way that they can help and it's something that they can do, you know, something that's accessible to them, that they will support. And that is what makes a boycott so powerful. And because for them not to eat grapes, it was easy. And that picket a store, because that's a little bit harder. But once they saw that could have an effect, then, you know, that made it very, very powerful. And it gave people a sense of their own power. And this is, I think, what the boycott does. It gives people a sense of their power. Not only the farm workers that went out to the cities, but the people that were in the cities that could really know that by these actions that they were taking, that a farm worker that they didn't know that was 3,000 miles away was going to be helped by their actions.
Okay. Now, we could talk a little bit about this, again, about this idea is that it sounds like you had faith that you were going to win from the very beginning, but I'm trying to get a grasp of that feeling, because you and Andy and Mutan and other people said, if you have a cause and you really believe in it, you're not going to fail. But how do you maintain that? I mean, where does that come from?
The actual struggle, the journey, you know, actually feeds the struggle. You know that you're fighting for justice, and your actual, you know, what you're actually doing, the activities that you're doing towards that goal are actually what keep you going, because you can measure it. You can see how many people you are getting to support, how many more religious people or community activists, or how many more volunteers, how many more leaflets you're passing. In New York City, during the boycott, we were passing like thousands of leaflets a day. Thousands of leaflets a day. We had strong unions like the Seafarers Union that housed all of the farm workers in one of their places that they had for the seamen. You know, it gave us a whole floor with bunks in it so we could stay there, and then we could eat at their cafeteria during that time. So, you know, all of this wonderful support. The teachers' union, they made videos, you know, of the boycott that they could send out to all of the schools. So, you know, all of this support that you're gathering and garnering every day, then you can see that your message is being spread out and it's getting stronger. So this is what keeps you going.
Okay, let's stop for a second. The boycott, I'm getting back to the boycott because your explanation of that boycott. You know, this is a film for empowerment, for inspiration. Mm-hmm. Any stories about you know, youngsters, high school kids that you recall that would be inspiration?
We had many of the junior high school and high school students that got involved in the Great Boycott. And I remember once when I was checking out different picket lines, that going to this one store, and this was in a very ritzy area of New York, and students were picketing, and one of them approached me and said to me, "Don't shop at this store because they've got grapes. Not only that, but their caviar is spoiled." Then we had another group of junior high school students that actually formed a team. That were going to be doing news conferences about the boycott. And they had their own little press group, and they had their own speakers bureau. And these youngsters just took it on their own to form the speakers bureau, and then they would go out to the different schools in Queens to talk about the boycott and let other students know. So this boycott took on a life of its own. You know, the people just kind of ran with it and carried the message to other people. I mentioned the Stony Brook students. These were college students, but they would come all the way from Long Island, all the way down to New York City. They would come on the train or on the subways or hitch rides just so they could come down and picket the stores. It was interesting because they literally cleaned the grapes out of all of the stores in Long Island, starting in Suffolk County and working all the way down to Queens and Manhattan. But they just took that on their own. And so everybody in their own neighborhood would take on their own local store and make sure they got their stores clean. But the young people were just fantastic and energetic of getting the word out to the schools and to their parents. And they were a very major part of the boycott.
So So what do you tell youngsters today when you want to inspire them about the change that, you know, that they can make? Because
Well, the young people have an awful lot of power, because not only of their own peer group that they can organize, the students at their schools, people in their community, but also their parents, because parents listen to what young people tell them. We can see that there's other instances besides the Great Boycott, which happened, of course, many years ago, but in cases of, say, smoking. A lot of parents have quit smoking because their children asked them to stop, or in case of the environment, many, many parents who were not very sure or clueless about what they should do to keep our make our environment better. The youngsters, their children are telling them, you know, this is what you should do, or you shouldn't do this in terms of polluting our planet. So young people have a tremendous amount of power, and their power is not only in the present, but as they are engaging in these types of actions to make the world a better place, they are actually strengthening their own power as leaders as they grow up and they become older and wiser and more knowledgeable, that they will be able to do even more.
Okay, which this you brought up one good point that I kept in mind, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about this. Pesticides. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems that the Farm Workers Union, Caesar and yourself, mm-hmm. brought this into the national mm-hmm. consciousness. Because you previous to that, people weren't talking about pesticides. But what happened when you started saying, we work in the fields, and this is what you're eating?
Well, people had no idea that the food that they're eating does not go through the car wash, that it comes out of the field, it's packed into a box.
I see it. Yeah. Or a truck. UFW brought to the international attention the whole issue of pesticides mm-hmm. and the fact that you were working, mm-hmm. work with it. The people, I guess, weren't aware. Could you tell us what the impact was?
People had no idea that the food that they're eating, that the way that it's picked in the fields, is put into a box and it comes directly to the store. It doesn't go through the car wash. And they don't understand also that many of the pesticides that are put on the fruits and the vegetables, they're not washed away. And they even when you try to wash them, not all of those pesticides are going to be taken out of the food. So people were shocked when farm workers were telling them, look, I work in the fields, and this is what happens out there. And you can imagine in those days when we were trying to get those first contracts, when farm workers would go and say, I work in the fields, I don't even have a toilet out there. Don't have a toilet out there in the fields. You know, people were shocked about that. And so that was very, very effective. And I believe that for the first time, consumers in the United States learned about pesticides because of our Great Boycott. Rachel Carson had written her wonderful book, The Silent Spring. But some people had read that book. But once the farm workers were out there telling people about how this food was poisoned, then it was quite dramatic and actually encouraged people to come out and help.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We good?
I think we're very good. Yes.
Anything else?
The other boycott story that we need to tell is about how the families that went out on the boycott took their kids. You know, yeah. And so you had like my children and, you know, well, you talked to Emilio. But, you know, people took their kids out there and they had to go into schools. You know, they were like displaced people, taking their children and having to put them into schools where they didn't know anybody. Okay. You know, it took a tremendous amount of courage.
But let me ask again. I mean, how if you could describe, how tough was it for whole families who were sent to New York or to Boston? It taken the whole families.
Yeah, well, farm worker families came out there. They had their families with them, their children with them. Many of them had never been out of Delano, California, or early Mark.
Okay. Well,
in Chicago. Then, of course, the Black Entertainment Network, BET, you know, all the programs like KPFA, you know, it was the alternative media, but it was the Black Entertainment Network. We could always get on their programs, and we could get on the alternative media programs like KPFK and WBAI in New York City. And the Spanish, at that time, there were very, very few Spanish radio networks that we could get on, but those are the ones that we were able to, because we had no access to the major media at all. And it wasn't, and of course, Gloria Steinem was able to help us by getting together some of the strong public relations firms, to help us out. But Gloria Steinem was a big help, because everywhere she went, she talked about the great boycott, so that people would take the grapes out. And so she was a big help. But the other thing is that we had a lot of leadership that came out of the boycott. Many people that were volunteers that dropped out of school to come out and work, because remember, there was no money. People were not making any money. We were making $5 a week, and I think we went up to $10 a week at some point. But that was all the money that people were earning. They, of course, got to places where they lived and, had to really hustle to get people to feed them. That was part of doing the boycott work, is finding donations so that the people could feed us. And that was part of the work that we did. So when we talk about these families going out there and having their children go into schools where they didn't know anybody, and knowing at the same time that part of their work was to organize the community that they were in to take care of them, that was really quite spectacular.
But you went out of the boycott in New York. Mm-hmm. You, like many families, took your children. Was that really tough?
Well, it was very hard on the kids, and especially with the year we were in New York City. They had the teacher strike, and then they had the garbage worker strike. So they went like for months without even going to school at all. So when they came back to California, they were way behind in all of their studies. It was rough, very rough on the kids.
It was rough on the kids, but mm-hmm. what do you think they got out of it?
Well, they learned a lot of new experiences, and when you speak to the young people who were on the boycott, some of them were, in different cities. They talk about those times with a lot of endearment and what they learned, and they felt that they really contributed to something very big, which was, getting these benefits for farm workers that we were finally able to win.
Okay. What would you say? I mean, you're talking a little bit about the feel that they contributed mm-hmm. something, but is that part of the legacy of what you've done?
I believe that the legacy of the farm workers movement is not just one of being able to get benefits for farm workers that they didn't have before, building an organization, getting the respect from the American public for the people that feed us. That was a very big part of what we were able to win, getting that type of recognition that these are decent, hardworking people, even though they're paid very poorly. But the other thing is all of the strengthening of character that the people that got from being involved in the boycott, whether they were students or they were farm workers, and a lot of leadership came out of the farm workers boycott. Young people that dropped out of school and came to work, when you run into them now, they have really great positions in different areas of government or labor unions or education, et cetera. But it really sparked a lot of not only activity, but you might say leadership training that was on-the-job leadership training for many people.
Okay. And just getting back to kind of this central theme of the power, mm-hmm. Even of the poor, mm-hmm. when you come together, mm-hmm. What is the message here?
The message is that poor people can make changes. That but we need to do it by working together and not being afraid to take risks like these farm workers who left their homes and went to these big cities where there was no land there, no trees, something that was totally foreign to them. And yet they were, willing to do it. And even though they may have felt anxiety and fear, they did it anyway. But it shows that we can make the changes if people come together, people work together. That we can make the changes that we need to make. We can make the world a better place.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think
that's it.
Okay. All right.
Very good to listen.